The following talk was given by Steve Hagen at Dharma Field Meditation and Learning Center in Minneapolis on April 3, 2022. This talk may not be played or reproduced for profit.
Good morning.
Good morning.
It's good to see you today. Yeah, I received an email this week. The person who sent the email made some very interesting observations, and I thought I'd like to at least pick up on one thing that he pointed out. This very first thing that he said was that the sense of certainty is the enemy of any close examination of reality. The sense of certainty. I think that's correct. To the extent that we feel certain about what? Probably some idea or occurrence or whatever, but it'll be some formed thing in the mind. Yeah, and to have a sense of certainty about that. He said it's the enemy of any close examination of reality, but with that certainty about a particular thing or person or idea or thought or experience or what anything you want, any form thing you want to name, even a thought or a feeling, many aspects about either of, you know, of those, that or the fact that these are often can't even distinguish between thought and feeling, any number of things there. But if there's something formed in the mind, and then we feel this sense of certainty about it, that we know about something here. This is what the term he used was enemy. I'm not sure if I would use the term necessarily, but is the enemy, this feeling of certainty is the enemy of any close examination of reality. But I would say, with that, it's more than that. This isn't a close examination of reality. Already, we're off the mark. If there's a feeling of certainty. The thing you could be certain about at that instant is not whatever it is you're thinking about or holding as an object there. What is certain at that moment, if we're awake to reality, is that that feeling of certainty about something is already, this is not reality. You're already off. There's no legitimate grounds for such certainty as that. So this is where we go wrong with so many things. Things that we might believe or take hold of. And so, and this is where most of us are, most of the time. We think certain things are true, and we believe them. Sometimes, of course, it goes to ridiculous lengths where it's just obvious that, that whatever it is we're hanging on to there isn't true, and yeah, we'll go ahead anyway. And many people might argue with you about one particular view or something if it strikes many people as being ridiculous. But you just go ahead with it anyway. But then the people who are pointing that out, that how ridiculous this is, you know, how that view can't possibly be right, but they too are also holding views. And with some of those views, they probably have some conviction, you know, some sense of certainty about it. And as the person who wrote, I think it's something that was sent out to a number of people, but made the very wise observation, yeah, that this is contrary to any close examination of reality. Because with a close examination of reality, which is basically just seeing it, there's no ground for such certainty as that. Every little piece of it can be taken apart, can be argued with, fought over, and there's human life right there. Sometimes these are big issues, other times they're just trivial things that nobody really cares that much about, but it runs the full range, both as in societies and groups of people who take on a particular identity about this or that and argue with others, but also just in our personal lives, in our personal exchanges with other individuals. It goes on. This is why the person that wrote this observed that, well, Dogen Zenji, a great teacher in Soto school, Soto Zen, he would caution us about any kind of rush to judgment based on our thinking, on our believing, on our holding views. And we find this kind of teaching, it isn't just with Dogen, it's with many other teachers as well. And we have Nagarjuna in his Mulamajjhimaka Karika, 27 chapters, each one beginning with pariksha is the term he used. It's an examination of, and looking at the various kinds of things that we might hold, including things like the Four Noble Truths, and but also time and movement and any number, but examination of. This would be a close examination of reality. And you're not left with anything to hang on to after Nagarjuna's treatment of it. And also in the process of doing it, you can begin to realize that this applies to anything you care to think about or imagine. But if at that point we can just reflect on our own hearts and our minds and look at how we hold to this view or this idea, there's just no foundation for that, no basis for that. And yet what we do to the earth, what we do to each other, because we hold views and we're getting to be so smart and so technologically advanced in all of this, and so powerful in terms of how we can manipulate and control, well, we think control, but manipulate anyway, the environment and all of this. Or we want to control others or take over their lands, and you know, so the kind of fighting we see in the world. Of course, there's that war in Ukraine today, but at any given day, in the time of humans here on Earth, there's fighting, warring going on somewhere. And behind it, you know, there's, in the minds of so many people, so much certainty and so much judgment about what is right and wrong and what belongs to whom, and on it goes. But Nagarjuna, you know, he points out that whatever it is, with a close examination of you, you have nothing to hang on to there. Nothing that ultimately will support your view. It's just simply there for us to investigate, and with enough searching out various things that you think, well, this is certainly true, you'll find that when you come to the point of there's no justification for any kind of certainty here at all. No matter what it is. And sometimes people say, well, mathematics certainly would bring us to, you know, no, not really. You can study Gödel and, you know, and his principles of, you know, incompleteness and, you know. There's nothing to be found that will support any kind of view we might have. And there's no system that we have to demonstrate that. If we really see this and realize this, there might be a little room for some humility on our part, and to not to be too certain about what it is that we're hanging on to there, if we are. And with this, we might also begin to realize at some point that you don't need to hang on to anything. I mean, here we are, and the world keeps functioning. When you begin to hang on to bits of it, and in limited ways, this might be handy and useful to have this idea or this concept, or that. But to carry on as if somehow you've grasped reality here, this is a big mistake. And this is what entangles us in all the misery that we create for ourselves and for others. If we could just see that there's no basis for any of this, maybe we can live in a more peaceful and harmonious way. And why would we want to do that? Well, I mean, when I want to get my stuff, what I want, why should I give up all of that? Because that is a life of misery and pain, and it perpetuates itself. You hand it to your children or to the next generation, and on it goes, or to your neighbors, it's endless. It is possible to live out of the whole, which isn't fighting, isn't even encouraging any kind of fighting or squabbling or grasping or greed and anger. But this is hard for us to do because we're so taken by this and that. So I do want to say, after setting down that first part there, that there's really nothing you can grasp and hold with certainty. This is certitude. I found it now. That will give you the opposite of what you think you have. That will give you all kinds of instability. But this is not to say, then, that there isn't... I don't know, here words will fail. I can't say anything here. Let me just say this, that there isn't any certainty. There is, so to speak. The word is problematic. But there is something without it being something and without it being an it. His language fails. But there's something we can wake up to, that we can realize, that is without doubt. It's not a thing. And that's what we're looking for, something. Maybe something that'll support me and sustain me in some way. That's probably the first consideration. But then there's all sorts of other things. We want those things that I want. I want those to be preserved here too and to last and be near me. And then the other things, push those away. But there we are. We're back to our usual understanding and take on the world. It's all for naught. I mean, it's for... But unless we really see this and digest it and carry it through a little bit, we are caught there. And we will miss that there, all along, there is something absolutely... Well, the problem is that word something. But there is certitude. It can't be found. And it isn't even something foreign to you. It isn't something that you don't know already. This is very important. It's very important even to realize that there is some possibility here for what otherwise appears to be, we human beings and all creatures perhaps are just trapped in this world of pain and misery and suffering and death and uncertainty and what's beyond that. And we don't know. You can believe this, you can believe that, and people argue about all of these things. And we say, well, but who knows? Well, you do know. We all know reality. We all know truth. And with a close examination of it, this is what Nagarjuna is, in effect, doing, is helping us, taking us through and showing us, oh, you think this? Okay, let's look at this on its own terms. It doesn't hold up. Something else here? No. He even takes us through Buddhist teachings. You hang on to that? You think so? And you're left holding nothing. course, it's hard to follow what he's saying there because we're so convinced of this or that. What do you mean? And you're drawing it into doubt, and I don't even understand how you're doing that or why. It's just obviously true, but if you stay with what he's doing there, you will come to realize that anything you grasp, anything you hang on to. I remember one time in a lecture that Katagiri Roshi was giving, where he said at some point, he said, whatever you think, it's delusion. And it kind of came in a certain, I don't remember the exact talk now or what the subject was or anything, but I remember it was sort of at a moment where it seemed like maybe he's just making a joke here. And I remember we all laughed. I laughed too. But looking at his face, though, I realized he didn't mean that as a joke. He was kind of surprised that we were laughing. And I quickly sobered up and looked at that and wondered, what's he saying here? But what he's pointing out is, and just in a kind of a casual way, just kind of tossed that off, wasn't even sort of the main thrust of what he was saying, I don't think. It was sort of a sideline there. But everybody reacted in a way that surprised him, I remember. But that caught my attention. What is he pointing out here? But this is important to realize that it's not in what you think or what you grasp. This is why we do have lines that I repeat a lot, like with Wang Po, where he says, the wise, you know, they go with what they see, not with what they think, not with what they grasp. The foolish, we go with what we grasp. We're not even paying attention to what we actually see. What I mean by see, this would be, when I would italicize it, the seeing that isn't seeing of an object, it's seeing of reality. But we're taken by the object, just conventional sort of seeing. Conceptual seeing, just conceptualizing. There it is, think. And it could be even not just with physical objects, but with thoughts, ideas. Oh, I see. And because we do that, and we'll grasp, we take hold of things, and it comes so easily to us. Well, sometimes we're sitting there puzzling over, what it is, I don't quite get it. We're thinking it through. Maybe eventually we can, you know, master the arguments and trace it from beginning to end and say, oh, yeah, okay, now I see. But it's all grasping. And as Katagiri was saying, whatever you think, it's delusion. It might be functional and useful. It isn't like it's bad and wrong and ish, don't ever do this. You're a fool if you don't. No, we're only foolish when we're, well, fooled into thinking that somehow, ultimately, this is how it is. This is reality. The way I understand it, the way I've figured it out now, and the way I see it, this is reality. But not if it's involving grasping. And again, the grasping might, in some limited way, might be useful. It'll help you find your way to the grocery store so you can find some food and feed yourself. It's very functional in a number of, you know, simple ways like that. And you don't have to think that somehow I'm holding some big, deep understanding of reality in order to function in this. Well, no, you don't. But there is that issue, like, well, what is this all about? And that's there in the back of our minds. And many of us, we might just want to avoid it, but you can't. Eventually a loved one dies, or your dog dies, or, I mean, just things that keep coming up. Man, it keeps reminding us, you know, there's something here. That we're uncertain about. And even if we make up some stories and we find other people around us, you know, who believe the same sort of thing, and maybe that we'll find some comfort in that. But if you search your own heart and mind, you realize that there's trembling going on in there. This is all unnecessary if we could just learn to see without grasping. So I just want to say that there is something. Well, again, that's the problem too. You can't see. It's not a thing. But this reality, here it is. Another thing my teacher used to point out, yeah. Reality, here it is. And then the other thing is, what is it? Because it's in the what is it part, this is where we'll get confused. And of course, if you try to say, this is why we have this little exercise in Zen here, but here it is. Of course, it goes, so here what is? And it's because, let me get the object here. It's just simply thus. Of course, when we hear this at first, it's like, what are you talking about? I mean, here it is. And I like to point out, well, you know, this isn't nothing. That's also obvious, but sometimes I suppose we can get puzzling over that. Yeah, well, okay, so it's not, you know, it's not a cloud. It's not, what are you going to do there? It's not a thought. I don't know. Are you sure about that? This is very difficult for us because we want to grasp, but there is this, it's just thus. So we have that, you know, here it is. What is it? Good exercise. Because you might come up with, and people will do this, they'll come up with an answer. So it's something or other. We have, who was it, Hui Jiang, I think his name was, approached Hui Ning, Sixth Patriarch, and Sixth Patriarch said, you know, where have you come from? And he said, I've come from Tangshan. And Hui Ning said, what is it that thus comes? And Hui Jiang was speechless. That was pretty good. He was knocked speechless for 8 years, at least on that question. Spent 8 years, what was he doing then? Was he trying to figure it out? What is it that thus comes? I've just arrived. What is it that thus comes? After 8 years, then he says, finally he sees, he realizes, even to say it is something does not hit the mark. But that's what we're looking for, something. We think the answer will be in something. You know, it's not even a legitimate question. There's no answer for that. If you put something there, that's what we call delusion. If you believe that, what you put there. Okay, what is it that comes? Well, I could say, well, I'm Steve. But what does that refer to? I mean, temporarily in a limited sort of way and in exchanges with people and stuff like that, and just, you know, people will call out the name and I'll turn around and I see, well, they're referring to this guy over here. So sometimes we get at least Steve M. and Steve H. singled out, so it kind of helps us anyway, I think. Maybe it probably helps you as well. Anyway. So what I'm saying is to say that we can use a name or a word to signify something, that's perfectly fine and functional. But at the same time, you can realize that, you know, it's just useful. So we kind of can talk and exchange ideas and, you know, for things to organize whatever that needs to be done. Take care of our lives. But at no point are we actually getting hold of reality as such here. Even to say it is something. So if we say it is something, well, that's fine as long as but the word is and the word it. Yeah, they're useful when we talk, but you don't have to be caught into thinking that it is something. Or whatever is going on here can be captured in a name. It's like with the orange juice thing I always give you, that, you know. You know the taste of orange juice, but you didn't get that as an idea. You got a name for it, but the knowing of it is, if you have a word for it, try to explain to someone else who's never tasted orange juice what it tastes like. And even there, what it tastes like, not what it tastes. What it tastes like. It's like something. Well, but it's not that. It's this. We can learn to live strictly out of this. Or, well, no, not, I scratch that. I don't really mean that. We can learn to live without losing sight of this. It could be functional, you know, to use the names and the, you know, please pass the orange juice, thank you, stuff like that. That's very functional, useful. But what is it? It's just this, just there it is. The moment you say something and then you think that this is a certainty, so the person who wrote that email and said that it's this sense of certainty that is the enemy of close examination of reality. Yeah, it deprives you of it because you won't be exercising a close examination of reality. And you'll say, ah, okay, here it is. I got the name for it now, and then we move on to the next thing. And then we might wonder, why is it in the backdrop of my life? I don't know what's going on. I mean, I really don't know. I thought it was that. I used to believe that. And that's probably why a lot of us are afraid to, you don't want to be without this. So we latch onto something. And if you can find others around that are hanging on to the same thing or something very much like, would seem like, very much like what you're hanging on to, yeah, we'll find some comfort in that. But that deprives us then of, you know, why don't you stay with that? Here it is. What? Because that might sound like you're left with uncertainty, but at some point, what is truly certain, certitude is found. And it's not a thing. It's not a barren name. But it is what is directly known. And it's directly, it's always been. It's impossible for it to be otherwise that this is not known. And there's nothing apart from this knowledge. Yeah, that would be including you, but now I've just made up something, you. But you would know, you know, you can see how that's just a made up thing. It's just, you can find this, because you already know it, you already experience it, you always have. But it's a jabbering mind, thinking, you know. Yeah. That's why we have teachings too, like, the one I use of Suzuki Roshi, where he says, I think it's in Zen Mind, Beginner's Mind, where he says, you know, when my talk is over, your thinking is over, your listening is over. No need to remember what I said. But during his talk, he was just pointing out some things about just this. Yeah, maybe we can just notice. There's no point grasping any particular thing they said. So you mean, I see your idea there. That's all wrong. Suzuki, if you said that to him privately or something, then he'd probably want to try to discourage you from gripping that too tightly. You don't need to remember. Don't hang on to this as if I've actually handed you something. Just pointing something out. You need to see it for yourself. But watch the jabbering mind. Watch the grasping mind, the greedy heart. And the desperate heart. The frightened heart that feels like I have to hang on to something. Understand that, yeah, that might kind of make you feel better for the time being, but the uncertainty is still there. If you search your heart out, there's some trembling going on there. This can be done away with completely. You just see that it's just thus, and it can't be grasped. Nothing to say about it. But now we can just go on and take care of our life in the world of named things and that, but we don't need to be fooled. So this is a very important point. But that is something what was pointed out in that email where he said that the sense of certainty. So just watch that. And, you know, as you're talking and exchanging ideas, whatever, and you have this sense of certainty, by golly, this is right. And you've got to see this point. That's going way overboard. Yeah, this might be a good idea in this circumstance since we're doing this in a limited sphere here. You know, yeah, this might be a better idea or a better way to go than this one over here. Yeah, and we can make, you know, but just go easy. And if you realize that neither of these really capture reality. The thing you want to be watching for there, by the way, I didn't get into this, but this kind of relates to it, though. But this is also very important. Isn't if we're thinking in terms of good and bad, well, this is good, that's bad that way over there. That's not helpful. That's just going to lead to squabbling and fighting. What is helpful are those things that can bring us toward a more settled mind. And what I was saying before, if we can learn to see and to live out of the whole, then well, that'll be a settled mind right there. So you want to be careful and do those kinds of things that we can call as wholesome behavior. It's out of the whole, consideration for the whole, keeping things a little settled here. My teacher, too, Katagiri, he'd say, you know, an expression he'd use, you know, pat your head if you're getting too excited or bothered about something. Just pat your head. Calm down. Because he knew, he finally got it across to me that, yeah, if I allow my mind to get into too much agitation, this isn't going to be helpful. Certainly not helpful in terms of seeing reality. And also, I finally started to understand what he was saying. But then it took years to, and I'm still, I guess, working on it to keep myself from getting riled up again about one thing or another. So I don't think there's any end to that kind of work. But we can get better at it over time. But that's the thing to be looking for. This is good, we got to do this. Yeah, there might be things to do there, but the most important thing is watch your mind. And see when all this, because it's kind of getting worked up over really, in the end, nothing at all. In the meantime, the way we're carrying on here is embroiling us in immediate suffering and confusion and anger and resentment and all that right now. So kind of just turn your mind back towards something just larger than yourself and your immediate concerns. And turn your mind back to wholeness, open it up to that. Okay, well, maybe I've said enough what I had in mind there. But any questions about anything I said today?
Yeah.
Yeah, David.
Would this apply to the idea that change is a constant?
Well, change, yeah, in the world of things, of this and that, in the world of coming and going, in the everyday world, of objects and all of that. Yeah, change is a constant. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But that constancy is of the whole. It's not of the various things that are bouncing around inside the whole, so to speak. That's not the best way to look at it because there isn't any outside to the whole. It's just totality. There's your constancy. But it is always thus. It always looks like this. Change, by the way, is an appearance. Movement is an appearance. You can't really find anything that's moving. Because you can't really find anything. And you can't find anything that's changing. But it looks like we find things to the extent that it looks like we find things, well, and they're changing. Now you won't find a thing that isn't changing. And in the sense that it is constant change, what is it even referred to? It's already different. And again, you can't grasp that. So you can see all of that, which is in terms of seeing the whole again, all of that within this world of coming and going. And it is always thus. It is always, it looks like this, sounds like this, tastes like this, feels like this. So I don't know, does that help at all? But the overall thing, which we don't pay attention to in a sense, because it's not an object, but it's always like this. Well, the immediate appearances will seem to change, you know, like right now, us here anyway, those out in Zoom land, you got your own surroundings, but for those of us in the room here, this is the immediate appearances of things, but later today, you know, we're all off doing different things, and so that will appear to change, but still, it's always thus, it's always like this. As for the thing that this might be happening to, or, you know, that's the thing you won't find. But in seeing that and realizing that, I mean, understand the whole. That it's always been this way. Always, you know, it's inconceivable that it could be otherwise. Can't imagine anything of that sort. Try if you want. So I don't know. Is that okay, David? Yeah. Anything else?
Sure.
Yes.
You mentioned the process, if you could call it that, of starting to see that there's no certainty in what your mind continually, in what one's mind continually gets agitated over, and that even when one glimpses kind of the insubstantiality of all the constructs that they get hung up about, that there's still this return to belief, even when in a moment you let go of your beliefs. I was wondering if you could say anything about the patience or the cultivation of patience one could engage in to continue to come back, because there's kind of that horrible experience of getting caught back in the misery of thinking that you think you've let go of. And I was just wondering, yeah, if you have anything to say about that, if it's even a question of the type of patience one needs to come back more often than they do.
Yeah, well, that's just it. I mean, we fall back into, you know, old habits, and that's to be expected, and that can go on even for years. But gradually, we can get better at noticing what we're doing, and maybe also we could. I remember some time back there, I started finding it helpful to remind myself, whatever principle it was that I feel offended on, or I want it to go this way, or any of that stuff. And I'd see myself getting kind of riled up first inside, you know, and maybe I could catch it before I started demonstrating, just all riled up. But either way. But I started to remember, to remind myself that, you know, what do I want here? Do I want to win some ridiculous little victory in some small ego-driven warring here going on or something? Or do I want to wake up? Do I want to truly find this Buddha mind? And that I found kind of helpful. But it took me a while to get used to reminding me of, because when you're in the middle of a point where you're getting riled up and, you know, well, you're not thinking too well, and it's hard to remember. There is a quiet mind, a settled mind. And well, I'm not exercising it now, that's for sure. And besides it, at the moment, I'm kind of burned up with you or whatever, you know. And that sort of thing is there. So that's difficult. But it is a matter of noticing this. And after a while, it started to become easier for me to really remember, you know, I don't really care about this. I can let this go. They can have the victory, whatever it is. I want an awakened mind. I don't know what that is, but I know it isn't that. So that started to become kind of helpful. But that's just an exercise that I kind of started to, and I certainly never perfected it or anything. But I think it's important there, I think what is important is to just come back and to realize, what am I about here anyway? Because I already knew the victories I could win for my ego or something were totally hollow. This was becoming very evident to me. And yet I'm sacrificing everything else to what I truly want, which is to stop living out of this kind of confusion and misery. And so if I want to drop that, let it go, well, I have to do it. And if you can, not that you have to do it right in the middle of when you're all embroiled in an argument or whatever, but maybe, you know, when you see it coming on a little bit, you know, or something like that. But just start to notice that After a while, it starts to become kind of sickening, at least for me. It was sort of like, what am I doing? And more with a more settled mind, it's easier to see what's going on. And it's really kind of getting used to just get yourself out of the picture, you know, as best you can and as often as you can. And you won't have, the self is always, when there's anger there, the self is right there with it, you know. And you're hanging on to this illusory thing that it's all about me, you know, kind of a thing. And it's all about what? It's just utter insanity. We can start to see it as that right when it's happening, and it's easier to, you don't go too far with that. And I haven't perfected that at all, but that does change over time. And at a certain point, when we can just remain here, at some point we might start to wake up to, oh, you know, this world isn't quite the way that it appears to be. That you can't really get hold of it. And yet here it is. So I don't know, did that help at all? Yeah, okay. Anything else? Okay, thank you.
Thank you for listening. To hear more talks on Buddhism, Zen, and related topics, visit dharmafield.org.